Chief of Baltimore, Maryland, speaking on sponsorship.
Good morning, family. I'm Hannah and I'm an addict. Truly like to thank God for waking each one of y'all up, me, and the program of Narcotics Anonymous. My topic is sponsorship. My sponsor is here. I'm grateful for my sponsor, and I'm grateful to God that she stuck and stayed and done some work. So when an addict like me was ready, she showed up. You know, it's something in our liturgy to say that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Yeah. And I remember, like, at my end, when I cried out for help, everybody was put in place. All I had to do was stay in position and reach out. And after I got the treatment, I read a lot of pamphlets when I was in treatment. So when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, we was reading the literature, and I kept hearing people say, get a sponsor, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. So I remember in treatment, she came in there and she did H&I. And I know now how important H&I is because it helps you connect to somebody. So when you go to the meeting, you'll see somebody like I heard them share before, if nothing else, for a hug. So I had wrote a phone number down, and I got in the recovery house, and I kept on seeing this phone number. I couldn't get rid of this phone number. It was on the floor. I threw it away. And you know how you clean it up, and it's just like this little paper kept being around. So it's like when I asked God to help somebody guide me in this process, it wasn't nothing but him. Because when I called her, she told me, simply kept it real and said, look, I got a lot of sponsees, and I want you to call some other women. Now, she'll swear me now, and she's sitting in here, I ain't called nobody. I hung the phone up and called her back, but I really did. And I called two women, and one of them just started talking, and didn't he ask me my name. And it took a lot of courage to reach out. Called another couple women. Didn't answer the phone, so I called her back. I said, look, it ain't working out. Can you be my sponsor? Like, I was determined because I heard her share, and we had a lot of the same similarities, right? So, like, she said, all right, check this out. I want you to come to my house. I want you to see how I live. Went to her house, and the first thing she asked me before she said anything else was, do you trust me? Mm-hmm. And without thinking twice, I said, yeah. Got all the literature, and you know, I didn't buy my literature. Y'all told me sit on the front row and go to anniversaries and marathon, and that's how I got my literature. And it was the flat book I was missing, so she gave me hers. She said, I just brought this. Don't worry about my name in it here. So I said, well, when you want me to start writing? She said, you'll know. A couple weeks after that, I said, I'm ready. And she told me that this journey is going to get lonely. Everybody is not going to go with you on this journey. Mind your business, stay on your side of the fence, and continue to do the work necessary in order for you to grow. I've been using that to this day. You know, now I understand how important it is to stay connected. Because I've went through some things in this process. You know, when I came in here, I was 19. I was diagnosed. I was HIV positive. I was sitting in the room, and I was hearing y'all share about it. And like, look, I heard it say, be careful what you share, because when it comes back, you got to be able to accept it, even when you don't like it.
Yeah.
So when I started hearing people, the whispers and stuff, it really ain't making no difference, because, like, for real, this is one of the things that kept me stuck in my using. And I ain't seen no way out. The disease of addiction had me dead a long time ago. I didn't understand it. I suffered with the disease of addiction. I ain't know I could recover. I ain't know that y'all live with HIV. I ain't know none of that till I got here. If you new here, welcome. This is an awesome process. Y'all told me to get a home group. Y'all told me to get a sponsor, get a service position. And all that was going to build my character. I'm grateful to God that I listened. Because, like, look, when I don't want to go to a meeting on Wednesdays, I got a secretary in my home group. You need to get there. Yeah. And I'm dragging, I'm kicking, and I'm fighting.
Right.
And y'all told me to, like, get into the literature. Get an own understanding for myself. Get my own experience. Right? And I'm going to read this out the sixth step. It say, when we are working step six, it is important to remember that we are human and should not place unrealistic expectations on ourselves. This is a step of willingness.
Yep.
Willingness is the spiritual principle of step six. Step six helps us move in a spiritual direction. Being human, we will wander off course. Rebellion is a character defect that spoils us here.
Yeah.
We need not lose faith when we become rebellious. Rebellion can produce indifference or intolerance, which can be overcome by persistent effort. We keep asking for willingness. We may be doubtful that God will see fit to relieve us or that something will go wrong. When we ask another member who says, you're right where you're supposed to be. We renew our readiness to have our defects removed. We surrender to the simple suggestions that the program offers us. Even though we are not entirely ready, we are headed in the right direction.
Yes,
y'all told me, honey, no matter what go on in your life, you ain't never got used.
Never.
I grabbed that. I opened up the top of this thing right here, because this thing right here, it be racing.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, I can't even sleep because I can't stop it. So, like, look, I'm talking about, like, it's opened up. And y'all told me to put no matter what in there. Y'all told me getting the no matter what club because some shit was going to come down the pipe.
Yes, sir.
Y'all said it was going to be so painful, like, look, you was going to be balled up. You wasn't going to eat. You wasn't going to be able to sleep. You wasn't going to want to talk to nobody. You wasn't going to want to call your sponsor. You ain't going to want to go to a meeting. You better buckle your seatbelt and get ready for this ride. Some things have happened to me here. And it's a lot of people in here that know my story on a deeper level. And like whatever anybody say about me, my clean date did not change. When I came in here broken. I came in here wounded. And like, look, it feel real good when you can like tell somebody everything. Like, look, I'm talking about when you can tell somebody something and they don't know what to say and they just listen.
Yes,
I'm talking about when you can tell somebody what you're going through,
yes,
right,
sir.
And they don't judge you.
Yes, sir.
That's why I love my sponsor. No matter what you do, honey, no matter what decision, I ain't got to like it, but I got your back. That was powerful for me.
Yes.
Because my mind is saying, don't say nothing, because you know they're going to judge you.
Yes, sir.
And it's real easy. I don't care about nobody judging you, but when you look in to connect with different people, the disease say, you don't need them in your life. But God say, humble yourself and ask for help. In spite of what another person say. In spite of what you think somebody said. In spite of what you think is going on.
Yeah.
In spite of what you think the outcome may be. Just try. We talking about the willingness to do something different. You know? Y'all told me, like, look, when you get in this process, to do some work. And when I start working these steps, I understand that, like, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell y'all when I did all my steps, like, I know exactly where I rolled, what was on paper. I don't remember none of it. But I stayed long enough to get my aha moment when my experience started working in the steps.
Yeah.
Huh, you got to surrender. Step one. But if I don't go through nothing, I can't, and I don't do no work, then I can't even identify with what's going on and what I need to change. I'll just say I ain't used. I'm all right. I'm good. I ain't got to do no step work. But when I started doing the step work, something started to happen. I'm talking about the feeling was different. My mind started changing. See, like, look, I remember when I first got here and I knew I couldn't use, but like, my feelings and my emotions. I don't know about nobody else. I ain't know nothing about no feelings, no emotions. All I knew was happy and sad. All that other stuff in between and all that other stuff, like, what is that? Then I got in treatment. Y'all gave me a paper with all your smiley faces on. Confused, angry, you know, sad, happy, you know what I mean? Frustrated. What? It's just happy or sad. What is all that? But I understand that there are different emotions that I need to get in touch with. Because I'm learning not to make decisions when I'm angry. Because I stir that pot. And it's funny because my sponsor will say, I know when you into something because you don't call me. It's something about like doing some step work and sitting across from another human being and grab their hands and take some deep breaths and say the serenity prayer and let God in and just be at ease and start pouring out your heart. And it's funny because, man, my sponsor do step work, it seemed like all day. And it ain't the part of just the writing and the talking. We start to connect and get into some other stuff. Sometimes we wander off course. But then I say, well, damn. I started doing that when I was young. Another aha moment.
Oh, damn, that was. Wow. Another aha moment. And the reality is, the liturgy just say I'm not all that good and I'm not all that bad. So I'm glad and grateful that I'm doing the work necessary because, like, look, I'll tell myself that I'm not good enough. I'll tell myself that I'll never become anything. I'll never become a woman. Nobody ain't gonna want me. Just a whole bunch of stuff to drive myself insane. I got married in this process. I never thought in a million years that I would become somebody's wife. Always wanted to. You know, I thought about the picket fence and a house, a dog, a cat, and a couple kids. He got a car, I got a car. You know what I mean? Just all that other stuff. And when I got here and I got into a relationship, what I understand is like, look, that mind your business, stay on your side of the fence, and keep doing the work on you, work in my marriage. My sponsor gave me that before I got into a relationship. And the reason I say that because I be wanting to control some stuff and I can't. And I had to surrender a lot of stuff these past couple weeks. I had to surrender a lot of stuff. I had to surrender my marriage to God. Because God, I ain't running nothing. I gotta let you have that, Niecy. I gotta let you have that, God. I gotta give you all of that. See, I understand this process, it ain't no whether you in or you out. That's it. This is a process of say your ass, not your face. I've been on the phone with so many women in 2 weeks that I ain't even never had a relationship with, but was willing to build one with because, like, check this out. All my single girlfriends are just that.
Yeah.
Now I got to seek married women, so every time some shit happens, I'm going to jump the shit.
That's right.
That I'm willing to, like, look, stick and stay.
That's right.
And I'm talking about, like, being able to call my sponsor before I make a fucked up decision. Like, look, sponsor, I need you. Like, look, we was on the phone the other day, and I'm crying, and I'm boo-hoo, and I'm upset, and I'm mad, and all that. And she said, well, because she done heard this story a couple times before. She said, well, baby, my first concern is your well-being, and whatever decision you make, I got your back. I'm talking about calming my spirit. I'm talking about having all this shit to keep on spinning around, just stop and say, okay, well, that's good to know. And it just don't seem that bad in that moment. I'm talking about, look, 2 weeks ago on my job, I drive trucks, right? And I get up 3:30 in the morning, at work by 5, and I got promoted in 4 months of me being there. And of course, I'm the only female driver, so people giving me a little, you know, hassle, you know, other people stuff. And what happens is, and what happened is, she having been here longer than me, why she get a promotion? Well, I get to work early, I go to extra mile, I clean the bathrooms, I go in the kitchen, I said I'm a truck driver.
Yeah.
So why is you doing all that? Because I was getting in where I was fitting in and I was helping, because at the end of the day, if they ain't right, I can't pack my truck and get my stuff there on time. I drive Pearl County every day, Monday through Friday. So the day it snowed, somebody had a bad day. And I'm sitting there doing my paperwork. My supervisor doing payroll. And the dude walked in the door and said, you want to help us take this stuff off the truck? Now, mind you, I'll respond because he can't be talking to me like that. And it repeated itself. So I turned around and I said, who are you talking to? He said, I'm talking to you. Now, this is the second incident that I have this child at this job. Girl was going through something. I went back, gave her a hug, grabbed her hands and said, calm down, let's pray. No sooner than I walked away to the back doors to open up the gate to help them take the stuff off the truck. He said, you still doing paperwork? You ain't doing nothing. You walking around here, da-da-da. So I said, little boy, leave me alone. Then he said, I ain't never liked you no way. So I turned around and said, do it look like I gotta lose sleep because you don't like me? My supervisor standing right there. The top chef standing right there. Our boss standing right there. You know, my boss said, come on, y'all, just come on. I said, come on, he disrespecting me. Don't you know, I went to the office because when I get mad, I get to crying. So I walked away and I thought, this God, please help me. I go back out, he said, I should knock your teeth out your mouth. Now, mind you, I said I'm the only female driver. It's about maybe 10 of us that work. Do you know, absolutely not one person opened their mouth to say anything. Do you know my supervisor didn't say anything? Do you know his supervisor didn't say anything? Do you know not one man in there said, wait a minute, you wrong? Do you know how that feel to have a man stand up and say, I knock your teeth out your mouth? Nobody came to get my defense, so I go in the office, I grab my stuff, and I tell my supervisor I'm gone. Now, I need to be honest. My sponsor wasn't the first person I called. I called my cousin. Because me, this is the second time. We ain't got a third one. But like the program kicked in and said, well, honey, normally when people start stuff, they don't finish it. So if you finish it, you're going to be locked up. You're going to lose your job, you know, all this other stuff. So like now I got accepted. That's who he is and that's what he did. Now, honey, what you going to do? And this is stuff that my sponsor gave me. Like now, honey, what you going to do? So I called, I talked to her. And it's funny because she go through so much on her job. She was able, see, now I'm learning like to get somebody something through your experience. She go through so much stuff on her job, right? Working with all men, she was able to give me her experience. And what I did was I followed suit. I went to HR. He ain't at the job no more. You need to know. Because check this out. I don't feel safe. I don't know who you are. 5 o'clock in the morning, you that angry that want to knock your supervisor's teeth out your mouth. And I was wondering, what the hell could I have done to make him so angry with me? He said nothing. They said he might like you. I said, but he wanna knock my teeth out the mouth. Mind you, because when I got here, I ain't had no teeth in my mouth. So I started to be like this. Yeah. I started to take my own teeth out. Like, look, they ain't there. You go. You gotta find another way to hurt me, baby. Been there, done that. Been there, done that. And it hurt it. I'm talking about the feelings and emotions of betrayal. I'm talking about like, look, somebody stood up in your face and you couldn't do nothing. Y'all saying this process is going to feel like a pump.
Yes, sir.
Y'all did wrong, but I'm glad you gave it to me because, like, I could have reverted real easy back to old behaviors and ideas and thinking of how I'm going to get you back. And God is so powerful because once I got back on the job, it was uncomfortable. Nobody looked at the part he played and said he was wrong. She got him fired. She made me sick. She thinks she all that da-da-da. Look, if you knew how much stuff I was going on a personal level, then I got to come to work to get attacked. Look, the disease of addiction is so powerful, right, that it's going to attack you because it just wants you to jump out character so it can say, just like people in this program, this shit don't work. It don't work. I told you. Stuff like that. But when you steadfast, honey, you hold on and you don't give up 5 minutes before a miracle, God told you the beginning of your recovery, if you stay clean, I got you. So, like, look, I'm staying clean. I'm connecting with my sponsor. When I go through something, I pick up the phone. I've been fortunate enough to have women ask me to sponsor them.
Wow. You back on.
I said, me? Because my disease said, you can't do no step work with them, and you can't do this. Well, let me let you know. A sponsor is not only a sponsor that has to do step work with you. A sponsor could be somebody that just listen to you. A sponsor could be somebody that you just talk to, call, and stay connected. The main thing in Narcotics Anonymous, staying clean must come first. For me, the increase in this program is doing the work. You ain't got to do no work. But the increase, I want all of what this program has to offer. I want all of it. You know, I ain't never sat down with the plate and just ate the steak. I did the potatoes. I want the biscuit. Matter of fact, make it a cheese biscuit.
Yeah.
I want the greens.
Yes.
You know, all of that. I want it all.
Yes, sir.
So I understand. When I got here, y'all said, if you're willing to make an effort to do what we do, you're going to get what we get. You don't do what we do, you ain't going to get what we got. So you got to, like, stay still and let God shape and mold you. It ain't going to be easy. Just hold on, newcomer. Just hold on. It ain't gonna be easy. Everybody ain't gonna like you. They told me that and I was like, shit. Yeah, I said, no, you lying about that. And then I found out it ain't personal. Yeah. It ain't personal. You know, I understand like a lot of us, as we go through different things. And because I don't get a phone call from somebody, don't mean they don't like me. It could be, they could be balled up like I just was a couple months ago.
Yeah.
They could be going through a divorce. They could have lost their job. They don't know how they're gonna pay their bills. So what I do is when I see somebody, I don't put my mouth on them. I just simply give them a hug, because when I got here, hugging was my thing. It's still my thing. I squeeze people so hard, my sponsor said, you gonna squeeze the life out of me. She said, you gonna set them on fire. I just grab him and I hold him, because like, look, check this out. My father, he has 24 years in this process. My mother is 6 months, she just got a year. She coming up on the year, the 25th of this month, 5 years, the 25th of this month. And as grateful as I am to have used with my mom and then be clean with my mom, that's a blessing. Now I understand through me and my father's experience that my father never told me that He never told me that he was mad at me. He never tried to control my process. When I was ready, I went to him and he helped me. So I do that with my sponsees. I don't pressure them. You supposed to call me. I tell them, look, call me, you know, every day, or they don't call me every day, it's fine. You still got my phone. I'm going to make sure I keep it on. So when you do need me, I'll be there. I had a sponsor I just took to New Jersey a couple of days ago. Got here, got in treatment, got some, got locked up, and was real scared and called me. And you know, my thinker said, you ain't called me before you did it. Well, honey, you ain't called Keith before you did what you did. I'm talking about like the need for control, you know. And I love this process, man, because like, look, good, bad, and indifference, we don't use. We talk about it. We get with some people that we trust because it's a must. It's like, you know, for me staying here and just watching the people that ask me to sponsor them grow, I understand how my sponsor feel about me. It's something when you do this work, man, and you internalize this work, and somebody asks you, you know, they see the God in you and say, look, I want what you got. I'm seeing you go through some stuff, and dad, you ain't using it. I don't think I can handle all that. I say, stop telling yourself that. Stop telling yourself that. I ain't doing nothing different from nobody else. The only thing I ain't do is crack open the bottle, go get a crack pill and dope. That's all I did. I don't part seas. I don't walk on water, none of that. All I did was what they told me to do. That's it. That's all. They told me, keep it simple. Don't add nothing to it. Don't take nothing from. Do exactly what we've been doing, and you'll be just fine. And it's funny, I'm going to share this, and I'm going to, there you go, I guess. Oh, well. So, before that incident happened on my job, we had a fundraiser. And I remember I was there from, it was the two shift, 2 to 8 and 8 to 2. And we was out the Maryland State Ground. And I remember being out there, this is March the 23rd. And they had wine, they had liquor, and newcomer. When I got here, alcohol was my reservation. It's on the liturgy, and I read it every day. And I'm grateful to God that I read it every day, because what happens was I had to tell myself the truth. I had to make sure that I was fully done and knew that all reservations had ended. And my sponsor had got me in touch with that, right? But watch this. I was going through so much, right, that my girlfriend's birthday was coming up. And everybody was packing up and they was leaving. I was taking a couple people home. And they was like, honey, you want this drink? You want this drink? You know, because they smoking. You want this drink? Yeah, you do this, do that. I said, no, I don't want it. But I got back to the warehouse. Watch how insidious the disease of addiction is. I got back to the warehouse and they said, you sure you don't want none? I say, well, it's my girlfriend's birthday. Let me take these two wines, because I ain't got nothing to give her, right? So I'm going to give her these two bottles of wine. Listen to you. I go home. I take the bottles, first of all, dead wrong, right? Because see, I'm going to tell y'all the truth. I take the bottles, right? Then I put them in my car. I'm hearing them in the back, because I put them on the floor in the back, and I hear them ting-a-ling-ling-ling in the back of my car. I don't leave them in the car. I got a whole bunch of stuff in my hand, but I make sure I take the two wine bottles with me. So now I done went in the house with two wine bottles, and I had a nurse say, what kind of fucking wine is this anyway? Oh, you know? So I put it down, right? And mind you, I couldn't even sleep, because I knew I was wrong. I knew I was wrong, because if the disease said you ain't going to drink it, then you shouldn't need to pick it up. You shouldn't need to pick it up. Look, y'all told me don't even play with it. We don't play with this thing. You got to make it safe. You can't play with this thing. Because that's how it sits. First of all, you already where he wants you to be. You got it in your house, and I'm the only one in there. So who won't stop? And I tell myself the outrageous sort of nonsense. I'm waiting for her to come over here so I can give her her drink. So what did I do? I called my sponsor, man. I called my sponsor. That was that Saturday night. I called my sponsor Sunday. We had went to a meeting out Dundalk. And then I called her. I told her what had happened. And she looked at me. Now, mind you, I'm mad because I done told her what I did. She looked at me and was like, this thing mean, ain't it? Because I had to go back to not saying nothing, because I think that you're going to judge me. Simply when you're saying, okay, come on back. It's okay. You ain't got high, did you? Okay. Don't do that shit no more. Yeah. And was fighting against saying anything, because what I thought, here it is, I'm thinking again, what you was going to say. I got them wine bottles. And look, the tripped off powder bottle, I was sitting in the bed like, I could just throw them out the window. Just hurry up and get them out here. Put them in the dumpster. Something said, no, you told her you was going to let her buy her own damn wine. She drink, you know. You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking, this thing powerful. And if I ain't connected, I left a slick. And I always share about that crack. I left a crack in my program, and it was easy for them to come in. I allowed them to come on in. Come on in. Let's talk. I said I was done with the disease of addiction. What you got to talk to them for? What you got to prove to them? What y'all trying to reconcile some differences? Because he'll make me change my mind. You know, I always take him back. He's whispering some sweet nothing in my ear like, girl, you know I love you. Yeah. And man and disease riding all over again. I ain't want to play with this thing, man. I ain't want to play with this thing. It's funny because sometimes, like, when my sponsees don't call me, in the back of my mind, the disease says, see, I told you I ain't had nothing to give them. And then when I do hear from them, they say, I miss you so much. I love you. And this, that, and the other. And I be like, wow. The disease don't want me to see nothing. Nothing good about myself. Nothing. Because I was on this job, and it's good, and I love my job. I have never said nothing bad about my job. When my mother called me and said, baby, how was your day at work? I said, it was wonderful. It was awesome. Because I understand you can speak stuff to, because I hate this job, and then you won't have none. Then you'd be like me on unemployment, mad, because the check don't cover the bills. Man, I'm bringing home way more money for less work. I love my job. I love it. I love it. I love my job. I get up early. I'm on time. I leave late. I do doubles. I'm there at 5 o'clock in the morning. I leave 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I love my job. You know, I'm gonna say this and I'm gonna be quiet, right? Listen, I took my GED since I've been here. I was working on my GED. I lost my first job last year because I didn't have it and was wanting to hold some resentment. Sponsor, they hating on me. Sponsor said, no, your ass ain't studied like you know you're supposed to. Because I thought, you know, because I'm talking about, tell me the truth. Because I want to blame people, places, and things for what I'm not doing and I know I'm supposed to be doing. Because that's the easy way out. See, I can say what you ain't do, but I ain't going to tell you what I know I should be doing. So, like, look, I really balls and knuckles. I'm in class, study. Now, I failed. I took it once. It's 5 parts. Passed 3, failed 2, math and the essay. So went back, passed the essay, failed the math. That math. Everybody said they had trouble with that math. I got a tutor, I'm with the BCCC, I did this, I failed it again. Took it again, failed it again. Took it again. Other day, got it in the mail, I'm a point off. So you know what I did. Yeah. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to go back and take it again because the reality of the situation, I'm halfway there.
Yes, sir.
Because I could say, man, because I don't need it anyway. But, Hana, remember how you felt when the job got rid of you because you didn't have it and you said you never wanted to have anybody make you feel like that again. So I had to, like, call my sponsor and I wanted to tell her that, you know, a lot of people is going around messing with these tests. And, she was laughing. I said, they rigging tests. Somebody rigged my test. I'm telling you, ain't no way in the world I'm going to point off all 3 times. I just got 400. I need one. No, they want them 40. Yo, it's something going on. She said, Hana, just come back to school and take it again. I ain't want to hear that. You did something to my test. But I'm just going to study harder. I'm just going to go. I just got to go a little bit harder, man. I got to take some stuff off my plate and focus on what needs to be done and prioritize it and get that thing so I can just pass it on. Because I understand, like, if I don't take care and I don't pay attention what's needed now, I'll always have to repeat. If I don't deal with my unresolved issues, then my issues would deal with me. You know, I love y'all. Keith, I love you. Thanks for letting me share.
Again, I'm Madeline Jan. Without any further ado, I'm going to give you my good girlfriend, Angie, from Southeast. Say hi, you on current D.C.
I'm Angie Addick. I'd like to thank my girlfriend. Hana is a friend of mine. You did a wonderful job. I love you. I'm taking a deep breath. I hope y'all praying for me. Because I need it. My topic is put it on paper. And I got a girlfriend that's sitting out here that we started together. I think we got 90 days apart. And so she know my story, right? I am extremely nervous. I'm going to say that again. I got these butterflies in the middle of my stomach, so y'all know what's going to happen, right? Uh-oh. God getting ready to do what he do. I know the putting it on paper is talking about the fourth step, but I got to lead y'all to the fourth step, right? And my story simply is that I grew up in a household where there was so much dysfunction and chaos, right? I'm the middle of eight. I'm the oldest girl. I had the mother that drank and the two brothers that shot dope. So y'all already know what I'm dealing with, right? I didn't want to be anything like either one of them. Nothing. And what God did was, I was so confused to what was normal. Really, I know that today I was confused on what was normal. I thought this was normal. I thought what was going on in the household was normal. I used at an early age, I can remember, and I'm talking about very clear, on pouring my own drink at 11 or 12 years old. I started smoking weed at 13, so my disease picked up really fast. I was real, real sick before I even used, because my mother suffered from depression. She would go off and tear up the house. And I mean, I didn't come out of the projects. We came out of a middle class family where we had five bedrooms. We had it going on in the house. I got some couple of witnesses in here. We had a bad house. I'm telling you, I do not know what happened between the conversation from the bedroom with my mother and father, from her coming out slamming and snatching the phone out the walls. But we never heard them argue. I just saw the behavior, right? And I knew something was going on. I just didn't understand what. But as a little girl, you don't kind of understand what's going on that young, right? And my earliest remembrance is I was four. And I was real sick. And I remember my mother leaving me in the hospital. And I can remember hollering and screaming for my mother. And as I was hollering and screaming, she said, I'll be back. I got to go home and take care of the other kids and my husband, right? And out of that anger, and out of feeling abandoned and unloved, that followed me for 53 years. 53 years, I did not understand why I wasn't loved by my family. And if you don't feel loved by your mother, that's your first connection. My father is not a communicator. But he'll buy you whatever it is that you need. So I have no relationship with him. So I was growing up in the household, but we with my brothers and sisters, we were close. We was dysfunctional as hell, but we was close. You know, we used together. As a matter of fact, our house was a party house. Everybody in the community came there. You know, my mother housed some of y'all, you know what I mean? Some more addicts. And we had so much fun in the beginning. But somewhere along the line, I guess around 23 or so, I started picking up. I started snorting heroin. And I found myself uptown copping, 16th Street copping in Brentwood. And I said, damn, how I get up here in these places? I said I wasn't going to do this. But and it felt comfortable. It didn't feel like it was unnormal. It was normal to me. You know, and that little girl was searching for a hero. Somebody. My hero was paralyzed in the youth center, which was my oldest brother, right? And I can remember vividly him asking him to bring him a shot of dope, and he couldn't move nothing. I said, what is wrong with him? I didn't understand the disease of addiction. But I would tell them, if you bring a shot of dope, I'm going to kill you. And I really believe that I would have done that at that time. But the disease snowballed, right? And the bottom line is, too, I wanted to paint a picture at the beginning so you could see why I'm so screwed up, why it took me so long to get where I am today, because it took a long time. Y'all got this microwave recovery now that really scares the hell out of me, you know, because when I came in here, we got it tough. I came in here, we didn't have the literature y'all had. We didn't have the experiences with the steps that y'all got, you know. So, and going through this process with crack was my new lover. I heard you say, we had a love affair. It was good in the beginning, and then it turned on me. I didn't know what happened because I thought we were still together. In the end, and I always want to remember the end. In the end, I was copping 5 months pregnant. And I said, I'm going to save this baby. When he talked about saving myself. I went to the detox for the first time. And I said, man, I got to try to stay clean for this baby. Well, I stayed 14 days. I heard them say, keep coming back. But if you ain't ready to keep coming back, it ain't applying to you at that moment. I didn't stop smoking crack. February the 21st, I had my son on my living room floor. I was in labor, but I was too scared to go to the hospital because I had never got any treatment. Crack won't let you go to the doctor. Crack won't let you come out your house. Crack won't let you feed your children. Crack won't let you talk to yourself and make some rational decisions. It destroyed me. And it destroyed my son. But God was so good. Because while I was delivering the baby, the afterbirth came first. I should have died. Because it was poison in my body. But what God did was he took the baby. And he used the baby for me to see that I didn't take the baby because I was punishing you. The baby was an angel to get you to see I'm trying to save you. I didn't get that at that time. I had to get some additional help, which is a therapist. And she said, stop looking at it that way. She said, let's flip it. Every bad situation, she said, turn it around and see the good in it. It took years. It took so long for me to get there because I had so much shame and guilt and I embarrassed my son. I was a crackhead and people was talking about his mother. I was ashamed of my own self. My father was saying, what's wrong with her? She got AIDS. She's so skinny. I was 127 pounds when I got the detox. We're going to talk about obesity in the end. Woo! I can't smoke no crack. I can eat a whole lot of food now. I'm telling you, my fourth step showed me that the mother I didn't want to be like, I had become. I had abandoned my child in that bedroom because the kitchen was cut off. I was on a battlefield in that kitchen. We was at war. Don't you come across that goddamn line. And I'm going to look at my son. And he said, well, what are we eating? And in the end, we were eating real, in the beginning, we were eating real good, but them damn food stamps started dwindling down every day. In the end, I ain't had no food. That wasn't a good feeling because I had to ask my mother to feed me many times. And she did just that. She gave me what I needed to get through that month because I was on welfare like everybody else. I was in a low-income housing like everybody else. But I tell you, when you at your wit's end, you say, God, help me. It's got to be more than life than this. When I looked in that mirror, I said, help me get out of this dilemma. He said, well, then go back into treatment where I sent you the first time. I was becoming willing to do it another way. And immediately, I called Jeff at Washington Hospital Center. I'll never forget his name. He said, I'll have a bed for you in 3 days. I went where the drugs was, but I don't smoke crack in Brentwood. So I went over to my mother's house and took my son. I packed him up. I said, for 3 days, I got a detox here. Because if I stay home, I ain't going to make it to detox. And I didn't know back then you had to drink some or use some to get in detox, right? And I didn't smoke no more crack, but I drank them last two freaking beers, right? And I didn't know you didn't have to be dirty no more to get in detox, like they used to tell us. And I got in that detox. And I said, look, I need some additional help. I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, for real. And when H and I would bring the meetings in, I heard you say this. Yeah. I am so grateful for H and I. Yeah. Thank y'all for bringing the meetings. And they sent me to the toughest treatment center on the East Coast, which was St. Elizabeth. It's for crazy people, if y'all don't know. I wasn't in touch with being crazy yet. But I got there. And in them counter groups, they saw the anger. But up under anger, I was a hurt little girl. And I masked it up real good. And when you see me most of the time, you see a hurt little girl acting out of the anger because I am still struggling with my emotions. But I'm a whole hell of a lot better than I used to be. And I take every day in recovery, and I struggle through. I ain't a damn newcomer, but I feel like some sometimes. I feel like some through my emotions, I am not able to relate sometimes. I'm not talking about relate to the feelings. I'm talking about relating to some of y'all well-doing asses. Because if I say where I'm at, I feel like you, Hannah, they gonna judge me. She got all that time, and she there? Well, yeah. It's a new damn experience for me, it's a new one for me. Recovery don't have when time you should go through some changes in here. I wish it was set up that way. But I got married, like Hannah talked about in my process of recovering. I went back to school, Hannah, and I couldn't read. I couldn't write what was on the goddamn paperwork for the fourth step. I couldn't even comprehend this stuff. But they used to tell us, if you can't read and write, put goddamn X's and O's. Okay, that's not an excuse not to do the work. But I learned how to write. And I'm learning how to read better because my sponsor bought me a dictionary. She wasn't going to let me die. She wasn't going to let me use no excuses why I couldn't get the work done and needed to do the work. So I did my step work early. Not only did I did my step work early, they didn't have books where you did the step work out of. She said, when you read the first step, you write with a meaning you. That's how I did my step work. My first cycle of steps wasn't well a step working green and gold. Y'all put a lot of power in that goddamn green and gold too. Really ain't as deep as you needed to be either. I think you could go a little bit deeper. We did some shit out of that. Another book that was a little bit deeper. But I like it. All the literature is what it's supposed to be for us. So when I did my cycle of steps, the hope is that I understand what I'm comprehending out of that book so I can apply it to my life. It ain't about me applying it to you. Like we want everybody to do. I'm supposed to work my step work on you. No, it's for you to work it on your damn self. So my step work, and let me tell you this. When I did my cycle of steps, because I'm doing another cycle of steps. When I did the first three steps this time, it meant something totally different. I'm telling you, God is so awesome in the step process. I thank God for my sponsee sisters. They propped up on the front row too. We got one of the toughest sponsors on step work, right? And she's so patient and loving, and she doesn't judge us. She'll allow us to be where we are, where we are. But the first, this, my first three steps mean something different now. It ain't just about honesty. Because if I don't see God in the first step, how in the hell am I going to see him in the second? And that's why I kept going over it with a minimum of concern. Because I couldn't see him in the first. God is in every step. And if I don't use him completely and give every, not my situations to him, but my life to him. The second step, when I found this God this time, I'm talking about you're going to go through your step process. You're going to see your relationship changes with your God of your understanding. And this time when I did my step work, I saw my step work changing. And I made a decision that not only am I going to trust my sponsor, I was going to trust God with my life. And then trusting him this time brought about a humility that I didn't have before. So when I look at me and I see the good, meaning the assets, and my liabilities in four, when my character defects jump out, he gonna love me no matter what. And if you can know today, if you did something crazy, it's okay. We done some crazy stuff too. I'm going to say this, and this is not a good thing to say. I was married for about, I'm going to say about 8 years. I'm still married. Let me say that. But I'm talking about living with my husband. I walked out of my marriage, left my children, because I said he couldn't do me good enough. But that was the surfaceness that was in there. Had nothing to do with him doing me. My mother was dying and my husband was sick at the same time. And I said, God, you can take my husband. I'll get another man. Leave my mama. But that's not the way God saw it. God saved my husband. And I had a resentment because that Negro lived and she died. I didn't know that until I just opened my mouth. Now, I love my husband, but I love my mama more. And I know that's backwards. Somebody gonna get that later, but it's backwards. Because when you get married, you're supposed to love him. And I understand when God took my mother, I was spiritually grounded. I was doing all the right stuff. And I ended up in the psych ward. I think my mother died in 89. I got here in 89. My mother died in 98. I had 10 years clean. And I lost my mind. I wanted to use, but I knew that wasn't the answer. So I used another human being. I don't know which one was the worst because the damn pain was the same. The pain was just as bad. I couldn't get out of the dilemma that I was in because I couldn't go back because he didn't want me. And my children said, no, you left us. We don't want you to come back. In my house, I felt. I was with a Negro that beat me, that disrespect me. My name was bitch on a regular. My husband has never disrespected me. I reduced myself back to nothing, just like a regular crackhead. And I'm talking about with clean time. You talking about something painful? I got to look at myself and say, this is what you think you were? So if you're in a situation when you got a Negro whooping you, or degrading you and disrespecting you, you need to look at who you really are again. That's what I had to do. And I had stopped going to meetings for 8 years. I didn't know if I was going to come out of this clean because I stopped going to meetings. I brought that drunk dope fiend right into meetings with me. And I said, I got to go back to meetings. And I came back in. And they judged the hell out of me. And they still do. And it's okay. Guess who don't judge me? My high power loves me unconditionally. I came back in. I started sitting back on this front row with 18 years clean. I'm talking about I stop it. Because when I lost my mind, I ended up in the psych ward 8 times. And I told God on the last day I was there, I said, if you get me out of this, I'll go back to Narcotics Anonymous. And I'll do the work. I will help other addicts. And I've been back here. I'm not talking about I just go to meetings. I'm involved with Narcotics Anonymous. I love what I'm doing today. I love being a part when I even know I don't feel a part of. That hurts when you don't feel a part of. I hope that we do better in that area. Don't judge me because I made some mistakes because I'm human. I do enough of that myself. I thought I had to be perfect, Anna. I don't have to be perfect in here. I'm supposed to grow through making mistakes. Narcotics Anonymous has allowed me to stumble, but get up. Work another damn step. That's what y'all tell me. What step are you on? Well, I mean, I got to step up on something. Why not in recovery? Why not allow y'all to see my humanness and my realness and my imperfections? When my character defects are out, my self-righteousness is one of them. Because y'all know who I am? Yeah, you're an addict. You need to know who you are. Ain't about whether y'all know it. You better get you an addict. I came back into Narcotics Anonymous. I got another sponsor. And my sponsor had a stroke. My sponsor got 29 years clean. And it devastated me because I had just built a relationship with him. He was the only person I trust. And then I had a good girlfriend that was taking me through the step process. She was the next in line. Just don't have one person in your circle. You're going to need some folks in here. And they're going to really need to know the real you, even though you don't like showing them. I ain't got to show all y'all, but I better let these two individuals know who I really am. So I won't die in here. I am so grateful that God didn't leave me on my knees without giving me such an order. When I came back in here, I came back on the front row. Dude was still doing what he was doing. And the more I came, the angrier he became. Because now the shackles are coming off of me. He didn't have the hold on me that he had. Because I love this Negro. And you can't have who you give your heart to. But you better make better choices of who in your hell you're giving your heart to. You take the blinders off, Angie. You knew he was messed up when you met him. You try to fix somebody. I don't have a step to fix another individual. They don't give me no count of two. I done used some bolts and screwdrivers and some damn pliers. None of that worked. That Negro went to treatment and got clean for 7 months. I said, oh yeah, we on the road down. For him to get more angrier because he went and got what he really wanted. So I said, damn, he don't care about me at all. I put me in the equation. You can't put you in the middle of an attic. It has nothing to do with him. It had nothing to do with me. What I do know, honey, is I don't want another Negro that's using that ain't got a goddamn thing to give me but some dick. I work more than that today. You got to come better than that, baby. And I got to say, it was all of that. It was all of that. But let me tell the ladies, I've been by myself for 2 years and celibate for 10 months. You can do it. You can do it. Men too, but I'm really giving the petition to the women. Because I know y'all buttoned up and moved up down here. It's all right. Because my mind was saying, I might could get me some down here too this weekend. I'm going to keep it real. Hello. But I think somebody that beat me to the punch, good for her. I can stay celibate. Because I still wants me a man. Don't get it twisted. I like the way I feel when I got one. So if I'm a little crazy, I ain't getting none. If you don't understand, keep coming back. Woo! You better learn how to laugh at yourself. You gotta practice the first step of AG. You are powerless over that feeling. It's a real human one. I am so glad that God is helping me, but I ain't perfect. I am still who I am. But I know if you choose me, you're going to get somebody good. God dang it. I am still married, but we ain't together. We ain't been together in 8 years. And the only reason why I ain't divorced, because God ain't told me to. This man has kept me as his wife the whole time I cheated. Now it's my turn to wait. It's okay. But if God say get the piece of paper and sign it, we have nothing between us because he sold the house. We don't have no cars in my name. He got a car, but I don't. I lost the things that God has given me by making a bad decision. Be careful of the decisions you make. I heard you say that you're married. Be careful of the information you put in your ear gates. Because everybody don't understand marriages. And it comes from a higher source. And if you're not sure, you go to somebody that's informed that is sure. So I don't do what y'all do because what y'all say about your marriage. I do what God tell me to do about mine. So I don't mind waiting today. I don't mind giving him everything. That's the decision I made. If you did your fourth step, you will see the patterns that you develop. You will learn to live with them and enjoy your life. I'm having an awesome time down here. I'm going to keep coming back so I can see you all. Thank you. Yeah.